To come back. I was mentioning last night about a lecturer who's a good guy, but he couldn't find any success stories to tell. And I think we in our hearts need that. That helps me. So I hope some of these success stories will help you. Let me tell you the rest of the story. From August 20th, 2010 to about August 20th, 2013, at the church there in El Cajon, San Diego. During that time period, we had the Lord give us 57 baptisms. Three never said they were members at Johnson Avenue, and a large percentage of those were baptized 2010, 2011. 2 or 3 years later, we had 35 of the 54 that were still faithful, at least in attendance. 38 people had placed membership. They were all faithful. 9 of the 10 that had been restored were still faithful. So 105 souls were reached in that 3-year period. So that helps me to understand the value here of what we're doing. So when I was doing the State of the Church address, which I recommend congregations do annually, I asked this question: what is Johnson Avenue's net growth rate from August 2010 to December 2011? In that particular time period, we had a net retention of 55 souls. We had about 10 that had either moved away or died or something like that. That's about 5%, remember? That's what you can basically, on average, count on, about a 5% attrition. So I had a 45 net growth rate, but we had a bumper crop of 10 babies in that time period. So you're back up to 55. So as far as just numbers, we enjoyed about a 10% net growth rate. Do you realize what that does in a local church? 10% net growth rate? That means you double in 7.2 years. Wow. And that congregation at that time decided they needed to set up a building fund and build a bigger building. One of the things I'm excited about for the A-Leaf Church is that you're having the exposure to this, and you have this kind of vision right as you're moving into a bigger building. Because what happens oftentimes is you start having a lot of growth, and you have what's known as the crisis of success. Now what do we do? Do we spend the millions and take up all the time and energy to build a bigger building, a bigger auditorium? Do we start a new work when people are happy and like being in the family they're in? In the city of Houston, there's probably not a need for another congregation. There's so many churches in the area. Do you go double services? People don't like that for a variety of reasons. And so different people have different ideas of what you ought to do. And so frequently, you very quickly bump into the crisis of success when you start having this kind of growth. And you push that way down the line because you've had the vision to have a new building right around the corner. Now, I also recommend that you have annual congregational pictures. I was talking about this to Troxel earlier. And here was a picture taken on September 18th, 2011. And it's just a welcome from the Johnson Avenue Church family. When you go to your website, instead of showing a picture of the building, you show a picture of the people. Wouldn't it be neat on your first service in your new building if everybody gets out in front of the building and you take a picture of the people with the church as the backdrop? People ask, well, what's the church? Well, you show them the people. That's what the Lord died for, not a building. But I want to show you something that just really was encouraging to us at the time. This was the picture in September of 2010. And this was the picture just a year later. Isn't that amazing? Let me show you that again. That's 2010. That's 2011. And you had that out in the foyer, and people were just really amazed at what the Lord had done. You kind of got to get a wide-angle lens as hopefully every year you grow and move forward. So, why is this so superior? As I said, this focuses in on where the power is. It discusses who and what God and Jesus have done and why he had to die first. It lays out the importance of the true gospel and its connection to baptism in a very clear way that most everybody who sits through this understands and can see. This approach is more practical. It's easier to get someone to agree to a one-lesson presentation. And most importantly, it ought to be relatively easy to duplicate. Let me tell you where I feel like, in retrospect, I was not as wise as I should have been in the use of my time when I went to San Diego. You know, I told you that I was just out following up on all these leads and getting all these yeses, and it seems like everywhere I turned there were opportunities to share this. And so I became consumed with my own evangelistic efforts. And I'm ashamed to tell you that of those 57 baptisms, most of those were from my efforts. The reason I'm ashamed is because that's not good. You know, I had well over 100 presentations in the time I was there and had about a 50% response rate on average. And that's what Ken Craig and Dan DeGarmo and many other people tell me they're getting. So that's encouraging, but wow, what kind of growth could you have if I had spent more time mentoring and duplicating myself and had a whole bunch of people out there doing it? And then what happens if it's all focused around a few people? What happens when that person leaves? Does evangelism stop? So really, that wasn't very wise. So I've completely turned that around. I'm spending Tuesday and Thursday nights and a huge part of my time mentoring and training people. We've only had 6 or 7 baptisms since I've been there. We could have had a lot more. I have purposefully made sure I'm spending my time teaching people how to do this. And then I think the Lord's going to give us a bountiful harvest. And I would recommend that you all do the same, because with these cliff notes on the bottom of the flip charts, it's kind of your training wheels. And I've probably revised that 6 or 7 times every time I go through and mentor it. Somebody says, don't you think this would be clear? And I go, yeah, probably would. So every time we do it, we try to improve it so it's an easier tool that someone can learn, and you learn it with the training wheels, with the cliff notes, and then after a while, you can get rid of the training wheels. You hardly look down. So this is easy to duplicate. And remember, some people think they have to be eloquent of speech. That is so not true. I don't want you to misunderstand what I'm about to say, but the first time I heard about this and I saw what great success that Ken Craig was having, and I listened to Ken go through the presentation, he's been here. I mean, he does a very adequate job, but he's not an eloquent speaker. He's not a preacher. He's an elder. He's a businessman. And so I kind of smiled when I saw that it was just sort of an average presentation as far as, you know, his ability to, you know, he didn't wow the audience with his presentation. And I thought, well, that means this is really duplicable. And so, honestly, I mean, and think about it. Why did God choose Moses and Paul? What did Paul say about when he came to the church at Corinth? He said, I did not come to you with what? Yes, with eloquence of speech. Same thing with Moses. He says, you don't want to call me. You don't want to use me. I'm not a very good public speaker. And so we got Aaron involved and all that. But, you know, listen, you can stumble through this. And if you do it with sincerity, you will do just fine as a soul winner. Yes, sir. Right. Yeah. In other words, I know what I'm doing, and I know what talents I've given you, and I'm still calling you to be used in this purpose. And he told him, as you go, I will be with you, right? Which is the same admonition he gives all of us as we go out and do this work. John?
In other words, Ken Craig can do it, any of us can do
it. Well, Ken's a pretty bright guy. All I'm saying is...
I'm going to call him and tell him, and he'll love
it. All I'm saying is... You know, he does a good job, but it's not because of his polished presentation that is the reason he's so successful, is the point I'm trying to make. So don't say, well, I'm not a salesperson, or I'm not a good preacher, I'm not a good speaker. You can still learn this and be very effective. Don't focus on having a Bible study. I'll tell you, that has been one of the more difficult things for me, because I've spent my whole life asking people to have Bible studies. But you will get more yeses if you don't use that terminology and you just say, would you like to hear a presentation of the big picture of the Bible? I've even had people say, so this isn't some Bible study, right, where you're going to sit down and, you know, it's not going to be confrontational. I say, well, if you want to talk about the Bible after we're done, I'll be glad to talk to you about it. But if you don't want to, you certainly don't have to. I'd just like for you to hear the presentation. Okay. See, people are used to sitting down and watching and hearing presentations. And that's really all this is. It keeps it from appearing confrontational. And the Bible says that the Lord's servant is not supposed to be quarrelsome or argumentative anyway. It's the exact opposite of what I used to do, and that is kind of go out and pick arguments with people. Don't do that. Start with common ground. You'll find an amazing amount of people that will say, yes. And I'm not suggesting you focus on waiters and waitresses, focus on the people you know, but most of the places when I go, I want to show people you can do this. Oftentimes they'll take me out to eat somewhere. And a large percentage of the time before I leave town, I can have two or three prospects set up. Well, just 3 weeks ago, when I was at the lectures, I went out to eat. And it's just kind of a part of who I am. So I asked the waiters and waitresses if, you know, I met two, and each of them said yes. One at the Red Lobster and one over at the Antonio's or something there off of Bush. And so I wrote Steve Patton's name and phone number on there, who's a preacher friend of mine at university where my mom attends. And I called him up. I said, Steve, I hope you don't mind. He goes, no, I love it. So haven't heard yet how that worked out. My mom fussed at me. She says, you don't think he has enough to do already? And I said, any preacher ought to make time for somebody who's interested to hear the gospel. But what I'm saying is what if all the members of the church, there are thousands in Tampa, Florida, would just, as they bump into people, ask folks, would you like to hear a big picture of the Bible? It's this really neat one-hour presentation. It shows you how the whole Bible fits together, what the true gospel is, and what the proper response is. A lot of folks see interrelationships and develop understandings of how the whole Bible fits together they didn't know. I just think you'd really enjoy hearing this, and I would love to share it with you. Would you be interested in doing that? How long did that take? About a minute? Is that very hard to learn? About 20 or 30% of the waiters and waitresses I ask say yes. I'm just amazed how many people say yes. And you will be too. But you got to ask. And you got to believe people are interested. And it's not that hard because you deflect questions until the presentation is complete. People are afraid they're going to ask a bunch of stuff they won't know how to answer. You just say, well, you know, I promise you I'd keep this to an hour. And so if you've got a question, kind of write it down or make a mental note. But when we're done, you'll probably find a lot of these questions will be answered by the time we're finished. But let me get finished, and then later, if you'd like to talk, we will. So you deflect the questions until the end. So how do you go about doing this? Well, you take a copy of the booklet, which is available there in the back. It's a short booklet. You got it handy there? Yeah, here, Tim. You take a copy of the booklet, and you sit down, and you just read it in one setting. Just get familiar with it. Put your name on it. This is your copy. Highlight it. And remember, there are two levels of learning. One level is, I get it, I understand it. When Ken was here earlier, or when you guys went through this material, it's not hard. Most of you probably say, yeah, it makes sense to me. There isn't anything particularly new about Ken's material. It's just put together in a very concise, understandable way with some really neat graphics. But the second level is where you know it well enough that you feel comfortable, I can sit down and explain that to somebody else. That's a whole nother level of learning, isn't it? And that's what the mentoring sessions enable you to do. I recommend, in the congregation where I'm at, I present this from the pulpit, usually divided up into Bible class and then the worship period, to like 35-minute presentations or something like that with, you know, an invitation and a review and all that. So it winds up being a little over an hour when you do it that way. I've talked with John about it. In order to make some more time for some of this practical motivational stuff, since you guys are already familiar with the material, we're going to start right on time, and we're going to go 55 minutes, and I'm just going to present this like I would to a prospect. And it's going to be sort of informal, and you can just sit back and sort of watch. And it's not that hard. And I want you to sort of think about how powerful this would be if some of your friends and neighbors heard this and see yourself doing it. So you listen to that presentation, you sit down maybe at a table and you're going through it and it follows the flip chart exactly. And so you kind of get it in your head and then you practice 10 pages at a time. That's what I recommend you do in your training session. Now, The study guide version of the flip chart, as I said, see these little cliff notes at the bottom? That's really only my contribution to this, is that takes away fear and it makes it more duplicable. The key is to practice sharing and have role playing so you can make it your own. I believe a huge amount of the people here at A-Leaf can get to stage 5, where you're joy motivated and you got your radar up and you're looking for every opportunity you can to say, would you like to hear this really neat presentation of the scriptures? You'll need 3 groups and a way to communicate with and motivate all 3 of these groups together. So, you need 2 frontline groups. This first group I call the Peter, Paul, and Priscilla group. And I would recommend the elders, when we're done with this weekend, hopefully the motivation and expectation is somewhat high, and you say, okay, who's ready to make a commitment to learn this? That's the Peter, Paul, and Priscilla group. You commit to learning the big picture. And then when you get done, you're put on a list. Where if somebody says, I want to hear the big picture of the Bible, or somebody else sets up a presentation, right now we have 10 people on our list. When we get done, we hope to have 25, maybe 30. Wouldn't that be exciting? So, that's the front line. Now, then you need to have a second group. I call them the Andrews. And those are the ones who become involved in introducing people to the big picture. See, for whatever reason, there are some people who just say, I just can't see myself doing this. You know, this is a volunteer army. I don't twist anybody's arms. I make the opportunity available. It's a volunteer sign up. If this isn't you and you just, I'm not doing that. Okay, fine. Will you at least be an Andrew? What is Andrew known for in the scripture? John 1, 40 through 42. What did he do? Yeah. He came to Jesus, and then he came to his brother, Simon Peter, and he brought Simon Peter to Jesus, and the rest is history. So was that a pretty valuable thing to do? You better believe it. So what I'm recommending happen is some of the folks who say, I can take these business cards, and I can learn how to use these, and I can ask people for big picture presentations, and I'm going to put your name and number and contact information on this. And I'll go with you with my prospects, but you make the presentation because you've learned it and I haven't. Now, maybe some of the Andrews after a while will decide to become Peter, Paul, and Priscilla's. Great. But the biggest challenge in this is not learning the lesson. It's making it second nature for people as they go out in the community to look for opportunities to ask people for big picture presentations. Please notice, this is not something you do on Tuesday night from 7:30 to 8:30 or 7:30 to 9. Don't compartmentalize your evangelism that way. This is who you are. As you bump into people, you talk with them, and you look for opportunities to ask them about the big picture of the Bible. And opportunities are everywhere. We had an insurance adjuster come to our house 2 days ago. And, you know, the colonial people used to say 5 moves equal a fire as far as damage. We moved from San Diego to Kirkland, and boy, there was a lot of damage done in that cross-country move. So my wife picked out all of these pieces of furniture that were cracked or scratched or damaged, or one piece was in so many pieces they just took it off to the dump. And so we kind of thought maybe this was going to be a little confrontational, this claims adjuster. Actually, we had a great conversation with him. He saw my books, and he struck up a conversation. And he said, you know, I got a problem with forgiveness. And I said, really? And he said, yeah, we talked about it. I gave him a couple of links where I talked about how to deal with forgiveness and bitterness and all that. He listened to them that night, sent me an email, and said, that was really helpful. So we asked him about a big picture presentation. He said, oh, I'd love to. See, they're everywhere. But my guess is most Christians who had an insurance adjuster come to their house wouldn't have thought about looking for an inroad to talk to them about something spiritually motivating and ask them for a big picture presentation. I want that to change. And then after a while, it's not hard. It just becomes who you are. Like I said, I was in Tampa, and I thought, well, I don't know who to give this to, but I'm going to ask these folks, see if they're interested. Takes 1 minute. Anybody here think they can't do that? I mean, that's the Andrew group. Okay, I'm not going to go to the mentoring classes. I don't want to present it, but I will ask people and talk up the big picture and pair up with one of the Peter, Paul, and Priscilla's. This business card on the front just has looking at the Bible message from beginning to end, and then on the back it says, understand how the Bible fits together with the true gospel in about an hour or less. The Bible is the most important book in history, yet the most misunderstood. I'd love to present the big picture of the Bible to you at your convenience. Give me a call. Now, you don't just give this to folks and expect them to call you back. What I tell people is, well, here's the card. This is sort of a reminder. Would you mind giving me your email and contact information so I can let you know the next time these big picture presentations are available, and we can try to set one up that fits your schedule. And if they won't give you their contact information, they're probably not really interested. If they do, they're serious about doing a big picture presentation. So there's a little training that Andrews need to have, and you role play and you practice it. And when people start getting successes, then that kind of feeds on itself. Now, behind the scenes, I recommend you have a Barnabas group. Obviously, what does Barnabas group do? Yes, they're the encourager. They focus on being encouragers and cheerleaders, and boy, do you ever need that. Especially if you're making a lot of efforts and maybe they don't go well. So, another thing Barnabas did in Acts 11 and verse 23 is he went among the brethren and he admonished them to cleave unto the Lord and remain faithful. And so I had a lady, very knowledgeable. She said, you know what? I don't feel comfortable learning the presentation. I just can't take the time out to do that right now. And I don't think I can use those business cards either. I said, well, just be a Barnabas. Everybody needs to try to do something. Surely everybody can be a Barnabas. Hopefully you get everybody to sign up to one of those three groups. See how that would work? Now, Andrew's and Barnabas' mission is threefold. Notice, I'm not talking here about being on the front line and inviting people to do big picture and all that. We need help in grounding of new Christians. You start bringing people in, they're going to fall away if they are not assimilated. I call it Operation Assimilation. You need to make sure you don't have cliques where these people don't feel like they can become a part of your social circle. Do you know that if new converts don't have at least 3 to 6 new friends within 6 months, there's a 90% chance they'll fall away? So they've got to feel a part of the group, and they have to be assimilated. And just the general spiritual care of our members is very important. And what happens behind the scenes here after people come into your fellowship is just as important as the people who are out there bringing them in. And so those of us that are Peter, Paul, and Priscilla's, we need help, folks. You know what would happen if everybody that I asked for a big picture presentation and then responded to the gospel, if I just stuck with them and continued to study with them regularly and discipled them? I would very soon get so consumed with that, I'd have no time to be out on the front lines bringing other people in. So if that's a skill and something I'm willing to do, we need other people to free me and other people like me up so they can take over this other stuff that's a lot easier and less intimidating. That's how we all work together. And it's all important work. You know what? I haven't asked him that question. I don't feel comfortable telling people to stop. I want to get everybody ready and try to get everybody involved to assimilate them as much as possible. Not that I know of, but it'd be a good question to ask him. Now, how do you create synergy where everyone works together? Well, I think you do that through a scriptural innovation to meet the needs of the 21st century congregation that I like to call an E-team. And we're going to close with that in just a minute. But I want to share with you what I put together on the plane flying over here. Setting goals and planning for the future. I normally don't talk about this in this kind of series, but I think I need to. Okay? So let's talk about what you need to do. First of all, how many are willing to be mentored and be on your front line as part of the Peter, Paul, and Priscilla group? You need to figure out who's going to be in that group. And of course, that's just going to be a group of volunteers. Groups of 8 to 10 work best. And sometimes it builds. It takes about 3 months to do this right. I spent a 3-month period, and we were able to have 10 graduate. About 5 that signed up dropped out, which is okay. I had 10 that said, okay, I'm ready. And then I had 4 men, 2 on one Sunday night and 2 on another Sunday night, get up as a part of the Sunday night sermon, and they gave like 15 minutes apiece, and then they talked about what this meant to them, and then 2 of the other men gave their 15 minutes apiece, and people kind of thought, well, if they can do it, I can, you know. And so we had more sign up for the second round than the first round, which was really encouraging. So we actually have about 25 signed up in the second round, divided between Tuesday and Thursday nights. And it is a commitment, but it starts and ends. It's 3 months and you're done. All right. Requires practice and role-playing and, of course, mutual assistance in the group. There is a beautiful serendipity that you receive from doing this. You know what serendipity means? It's an unintended positive consequence from something. I already mentioned one of them. What happens to your own faith when you learn this? Really does help your own faith. And secondly, the fellowship and the closeness that you feel in this informal environment when you're helping each other and kind of mutually critique and go through all of this and you see the progress has been outstanding. So, I mean, this is provoke one another into love and to good works on a very serious, important level. So I've really created some bonds with these folks in this mentoring process. And that's a nice serendipity. The Kirkland goal, when we get done with all of this, is to wind up with 25 on our Peter, Paul, and Priscilla list.
And how big is the congregation?
We are running now about in the 130s, but 6
members.
No, attendance.
Oh, okay.
I think we probably have close to about what you guys do. Troxel, were you telling me 108 here at A-Leaf? We're about the same size you are. Yeah, about a quarter of the people. And we're blessed, like you guys are, to have a lot of 10-talent people, well-educated folks, that certainly, if they want to do this, can. But you have to also factor something else in. How many will be mentored as future trainers or future mentors so it'll be not left up to just a few? See, that's real important to me. I think the test of my work is going to be, how does Kirkland Church of Christ do when I'm gone? So I'm doing all the mentoring now, but I picked out 3 other people that I'm meeting with and talking to, training them how to do the mentoring classes. And I'm kind of glad in a way I'm out of town because I said, okay, this is your first time. Go at it. They did the mentoring classes while I was gone. I got great reviews. They're telling me, I think I can do this next time. Guess what? Next time we have a group of people ready to learn, I don't have to do it. So I can be busy about other things. Maybe doing my own big picture presentations. But I won't be alone this time. See what I'm saying? So you need to focus in on who's going to not just do this, but who's ready to say, I'm going to try to share in the next mentoring. All right. Next, how many will be courageous enough and trained and encouraged to invite people regularly to hear big picture presentations? You know, I'm finding something sort of unusual, and that is that there's oftentimes more folks willing to do number one, learn the lesson, than do number two, and that is ask people to do big picture presentations. I mean, I've done it enough to me that's not hard. But for a lot of folks who are not used to doing that, it's out of their comfort zone, and for them it's hard until they get used to doing it. So Peter, Paul, and Priscilla's and Andrew's together need to commit to do this very important step. If you're going to learn the lesson, obviously you need to be willing to ask people if you can share it with them. Doesn't that make sense? But we don't want to just leave that up to the Peter, Paul, and Priscillas. You need to have the Andrews out there because, after all, knowledge is of no value unless you put it to use. I mean, if you train all these people how to do the big picture, nobody has the courage to ask anybody to hear it. You've just wasted your time, folks. So you've got to figure out some way to motivate these people. You've got to keep track of your weekly efforts and report to the E-team for prayers and accountability if you expect to change the culture. Our goal at Kirkland is to have 50 Andrews. Now, they may not wind up actually doing what they say they're going to do, but they said, I want to learn better. I want to learn how to do this. And I'm working with those folks. What is a reasonable goal per week or maybe per month for invitations to folks to hear the big picture? Hopefully this goes up over time. Is it reasonable to think that 50 people who've committed to ask people to hear the big picture, that out of those 50 people, we could at least get on average 25 invitations per month? I mean, I first thought 25 per week, but I want to be realistic. I mean, one a week to me isn't hard, but can we encourage folks to do a minimum of one a month? Surely we can do one a month. Now, some can do more than others because of the nature of their work. You know, somebody who's retired and maybe doesn't get out much versus somebody who's networking more with people naturally. John was talking about the fact that, you know, sometimes he doesn't connect with that many new people. So people are going to have different opportunities here. But on average, surely 25 per month is doable. I would think. All right, now, how many actual presentations will you make per month? Should be how many will make actual presentations per month. What is a reasonable goal to have people that are trained once these groups are established? Wow, I didn't put that together very well, did I? Haste makes waste. Troxel's saying, we've got to leave. I'm going, yeah, but I've got this brainstormer, what I want to do here to help the group. All right, 5 a month, it seems to me, is a very good starting place and a minimum. You got all this activity going on. Surely you'll have 5 successful presentations a month. I mean, that's not that much of a challenge. I would think over time you could up this to 10 or 15. I mean, I was having more than 5 a month, just me as an individual. Surely all these people working together can have 5 a month. What I'm trying to do here is to be conservative. If you did that, you'd have 60 presentations a year, right? 5 times 12. All right. A conservative 30% response rate. Overall, I usually get about 50, but let's just do 30. You're going to have 18 to 20 new converts a year using very conservative numbers. And then you've got to make sure you do follow-up and aftercare, discipleship. Big time. Very, very important. Again, operation assimilation. Hospitality and teaching are equally important here. And somebody who's a Barnabas, who is just friendly and has them over into their home for a meal, can be just as much an important part of that person being encouraged and remaining faithful as someone who's a Bible whiz and is answering all their difficult questions. Now, having said that, I want you to realize something that's already mentioned. John mentioned this. Who gives the increase? Yeah, God, of course, gives the increase. So all I'm saying is focus in on being faithful. Come up with goals for faithfulness for your group and let God work on the eventual numbers. I would not recommend you say, okay, we want to have 20 baptisms next year. That's really God's job. But I'm suggesting that if you focus in on the part that you're supposed to do and you become good at it, generally speaking, the baptisms are going to follow. But the goals ought to be being faithful to sow the seed and learn the seed and share it, seems to me, rather than simply on numbers. Now, how do you make this sustainable and part of the culture? How do you avoid the fact that 95% of all programs do not succeed long term? Well, we make it a part of who and what we are. You change the expectations and focus of the culture. But how do you do that? How do you avoid burnout and discouragement? How do we provide good communication so as to produce synergy and practical encouragement? How do we overcome the fear of rejection and the fact that many feel uncomfortable sharing their faith because in our church culture it's not even emphasized? How do you do all that? I'm really concerned about that. Well, I think the answer is these E-teams. which are ongoing. The training is 3 months and it stops. The E-teams just becomes a part of what you do. What does the E stand for? E stands for, obviously, evangelism, personal outreach and soul winning, encouragement, effectual fervent prayer. You need to be praying about these people. Make a prospect list, mention their name in prayer. And I believe that oftentimes they will then ask you, because you've been praying for them and God's working on their heart. And email, communication through an opt-in distribution list, and someone is free to opt out anytime they want to. This is not anything but a volunteer group that's here to help each other. So, here are the goals of our E-teams, and I recommend you do the same. I have a more detailed handout where I go through all of this, and I'm going to share this with the leadership before I go. You share news, different parts of information put together through regular updates. You talk about prospects. You talk about, I went to this restaurant, and this fella agreed, and if you want to go to that restaurant and maybe ask for that person to wait on you and follow up, that would be great. The point is you focus on collaboration, and you shoulder yokes. Some people get kind of frightened and they feel they messed up and they need to have that burden dealt with. It's okay to share problems as well as successes. So you share responsibilities. You're not alone. You immerse seekers into a caring culture where a visitor comes through that door, especially somebody you've already come to know about, and on their email list, boy, I tell them who the visitor's cards are and who the prospects are. They didn't used to have hardly any. We had 17 last Sunday. You think people aren't talking this up and talking to their friends and creating enthusiasm? You better believe it. And people need to know who those folks are.